The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
We're going to return to that developing news in the Middle East. In the past hour, as we've been discussing, Israel has accused Iran of violating the ceasefire agreement announced by Donald Trump last night, saying that they had identified missiles launched from Iran a little while ago and they would retaliate with strikes in the heart of Tehran. Iran, meanwhile, has denied firing any missile at Israel. The ceasefire announcement and accusations of it being broken followed a night of airstrikes from both Israel and Iran, with Tehran residents reporting the worst night of attacks so far, while at least four people were killed in the southern Israeli town of Beersheba. To get the latest from Tel Aviv, we're joined by journalist Paul Kearns. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
First of all, you must have been relieved to hear an announcement of a ceasefire, and you could kind of get out of the bunker and relax for a little bit.
Certainly. There was at least six missile attacks last night. The sirens where I am in Tel Aviv went off three or four times. So there was surprise and welcome this morning when we read the ceasefire had been agreed.
And then when you look at the damage that has been done, I mean, a lot of the pictures we've seen from Tel Aviv and its environs have been of destroyed buildings, but very little loss of life.
That's true. There's 30 people have died. More than 1,000 have been injured. In fact, less died in this 10-day war than the Hezbollah strikes in northern Israel in the last year. But the devastation across dozens of sites in Israel, particularly in Tel Aviv, is striking, and it has shocked Israelis, the extent of, you know, entire city blocks being destroyed. I presume the 30 dead the low death rate is because of the everybody having access, or most people having access, to bomb shelters in the cities that were attacked.
And of course, the air defense is being so effective that only a tiny fraction of the missiles actually get through.
Well, that's what they say. You know, the figures vary from 5 to 10%. On some days, though, you know, I read that the missiles sent were as low as 20, and the following morning, at least four or five sites in the country were hit.
So the agreement by Israel to a ceasefire, and we can talk about the accusations of violation in a moment, but the agreement by Israel, was that in any way, do you think, conditioned by the fact that they looked at the devastation, even, you know, a well-air-defended Israel can mount, you know, the defense they can mount against Iran? They look at the devastation and say, if we keep having this happen to our population, maybe the government might be in jeopardy.
Well, I think the priority for Netanyahu was to declare a victory in relation to the destruction or the significant interruption of Iran's nuclear program. I mean, that's his life's mission, is to prevent Iran having a nuclear bomb. And this morning, he was quoted as saying he's removed that existential threat. Of course, the question is for how long, 2, 4 years, etc. But he has said that Israel has achieved all of its objectives and much more. The degree to which Israelis could tolerate another 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 2 months of this level of interruption in their lives and fear is a good point. Israelis haven't experienced anything like this before in their recent memory. They haven't seen this level of destruction, obviously, inside Israel. They've seen it in Gaza. And I doubt if the Israeli public would tolerate another month or two of this.
Now, when you look at the devastation that was caused in Tel Aviv in certain specific areas, and no loss of life or no major loss of life, and you contrast it to what's going on in Gaza, I mean, do any Israelis kind of think for a moment, this is only a fraction of what we're doing in Gaza, or do they know?
I'm sure many Israelis do think that, but I have been struck, I have to say, by the lack of stories on Gaza in the past 12 days. Gaza has literally vanished from the news here. Before this war with Iran, the major focus, obviously, of news channels was the war with Gaza, and a major focus of that was the continued status of the remaining hostages, and lots of stories on October the 7th, which are played out regularly on Israeli news. But since this war began, even stories about the hostages have literally vanished. No, it's just a reality that Israelis don't see on the mainstream channel news the extent of the devastation and the horror unleashed in their name by the IDF on Gaza. They simply do not.
Now, the question of, you know, Israel generally united behind Netanyahu for the strikes on the nuclear facilities in Iran, that's one thing. They obviously have their differences with him on other matters, many people do. But is there any likelihood that Netanyahu could call a snap election based on his success in Iran and hopefully to secure better support than he currently has in this wartime government?
Well, there is some informed speculation that he may do that. His government is constantly at risk. Any progress in terms of the status of Gaza from the perspective of humanitarian relief or a long-term plan puts in jeopardy the far right, who want nothing more than ethnic cleansing and, you know, colonization. So there is a view that having effectively destroyed Hamas, decapitated and destroyed Hezbollah, taken out apparently Iran's nuclear capability, removed the regime in Syria, that he could go to the country and get considerable support and on the basis of that.
And this would render him presumably impervious to any prosecution, or would it? Because he is impervious to prosecution as a wartime leader. If he's no longer leading, if you like, that wartime effort, even if it was under a new government, would he not be vulnerable?
Well, he's under indictment in Israel, you know, under the Israeli legal judicial system for corruption. And it was interesting to note that that case has been going on for years, dragging on for years. But in the days just prior to the attack on Iran, he first had to give defense in his own case. So that's not going away fast. So that's something that will continue to hang over him, whether he calls an election or not. That's where external pressure and his potential arrest as a war criminal, that's an entirely different matter. Mm.
But the idea that he is free from the likelihood of facing a court because of the ongoing war, there was one, a 12-day war, it would appear, over in Iran, but the ongoing war in Gaza, that as long as that's going on, he won't be prosecuted. So there's nothing to actually encourage him to give up that effort, is there?
But I don't think he won't be prosecuted. As I said, the case has continued incredibly slowly, and he was in court defending himself against corruption charges while he was prime minister. And, you know, it was interesting to watch. He was calling for constant breaks to deal with, you know, emergency situations or military decisions. So that case is not going away. The reality, though, if he calls an election, having, in his view, and in a significant, maybe minority of Israelis achieved incredible military achievements, notwithstanding the horrific cost, you know, to the country and also to Gaza, that he might actually win. I mean, popularity of his party is quite low. It's only about 20% in the vote. And, you know, the polls do suggest if there was an election held tomorrow morning that he would lose. But I think, you know, a campaign is a different matter, and campaigns in Israel last 3 months, and selling the success, in his view, of the attack on Iran might have played a big factor in the election, or will play a big factor in the election.
Now, finally, Paul, I should talk to you about the Occupied Territories Bill. The government here is bringing that, Simon Harris is bringing that to Cabinet today. He says he's open to even amending that if it's legal to include services from companies operating out of the occupied territories. Are Israelis across that? Are they aware of it?
Frankly, I'm not sure how many would be aware of it. Some would be. I think its symbolism is very important to, you know, the left in Israel, the small left, wherever you draw that line, 15-20% of the Zionist left, which would welcome, I think, efforts to distinguish between Israel proper and the occupied territories. And, you know, in a kind of an ironic way, you could argue that the bill is a Zionist bill because it's separating the Israeli state proper from the occupation. And there's people, as I said, who would believe that that gives some hope value to those on the political left in Israel who continue to voice opposition to the occupation.
Paul Kearns, a journalist based in Tel Aviv. Paul, stay safe and thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.